Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Always a pleasure to be able to share this time with you. We begin our program today, as we always do, with the latest on health and healing. All the information I'm about to share comes from the National Library of Medicine, from respected institutions, and was peer-reviewed. Why do I say that? Many of you think, well, Gary, we've been listening a long time, we know that. But we have an awful lot of new listeners all over the world. Why? Because we're carried on what is called Zeno. That's that phone that you can pick up dial number and you can suddenly hear us. So we have people listening throughout Africa, South America, Europe, everywhere. And they may not know this. And historically, we wanted to make sure that the information we were sharing wasn't just off the top of my head, just my own opinion. It is not. Now, I will insert little personal anecdotes in here that might better clarify and give a better context what I'm sharing, but it's quality information. I'll show you. University of Michigan. Walking downhill after meals boosts your brain health or your bone health in postmenopausal women with diabetes. So there's three components here. One is we normally think about just walking, but they're saying no. Walk downhill. Okay, why? Because if you're watching this, and we Zoom play this, when you're walking downhill, you're forcing a greater pressure per square inch when you strike the ground. That means your bones, especially your bones in your leg and hips, are going to have minerals like calcium, magnesium, manganese, boron, silica, minerals that are essential for bone health, vitamin K, to go into the bone. And therefore, jogging, power walking, and walking downhill strengthens your bones. It was 2 years ago that I did the second of my anti-aging clinical studies on campus down in Texas. One of the women there was 95 years of age. And she said that she was so happy to be there because her doctor said, you won't make it on the flight. You have extreme osteoporosis, thinning of the bones. And all you need to do is just even sitting down, you could make a crack in your hips. And that could lead to a fracture. And then all these infections come because generally when a person has osteoporosis, they also have a weakened immune system. Okay. So she pleaded with the doctor, and finally she said, look, I'm 95 years of age. I'm going to die at any time, and I'm lucky to be alive. I've lived longer than most people's average lifespan of about 76. So I'm almost 20 years past my death date, right? Well, the doctor couldn't argue the issue. And she says, so I'm taking a chance, but I believe it's worth it. It sure was. So there she is, she's down there, and she's in the gym, and we have about 15 different exercises that we were given by a top anti-aging scientist, medical doctor, MD, PhD, Dr. Robert Goldman, and here's what we had to do, before and after. Film it, record it, so that we can see, was our study able to demonstrate objectively that we took a person who was weak and got them stronger? Endurance, better. All of these studies in the gym and on the road were very vigorous, but it starts with your baseline. In other words, let's go for a walk. We have a little meter, and this meter will tell you how many steps you take, and you have a stopwatch, how long it takes you to walk a certain distance. And then we have some hills. How long does it take you to walk up this steep hill? And we record that on day one, right through every day. And that way we can have objective data. It's not subjective, it's objective, of how well you improved. They were sponsoring the physical part of the exercise. Sponsoring mean not giving us money, but rather, this is the protocol you must follow to make this study significant and credible. Okay. Well, several of the older people in their 80s and 90s, two were in their 90s, weren't able to do much. In fact, we have two ropes. You've seen the whip ropes. Pick them up and you bring them up and down and up and down and up and down. They're about 20 feet long. When we started to time them, woman couldn't even pick up the ropes. I mean, couldn't lift them, let alone swing them. And when it came to sit-ups, no. Push-ups, no. Squats, no. That was on day one. But at the end of the study, on the last day, she did multiples of everything. She had tremendous improvement. But we also have an impedance apparatus that measures when you step on it. It sends an electrical charge through your body. And that charge is able to measure the amount of water, see if you're properly hydrated. Most people are not. And how much your muscle mass is, how much your fat body mass index is, and how much your bone is. There was a significant improvement in her bone mass, in her muscles, but also in her endurance. When she went home, her doctor was just amazed because they have nothing that can reverse osteoporosis when it's very far advanced. So I'm simply saying that osteoporosis is a major, major health problem for postmenopausal men and women. But we had it all wrong. We thought people fell down, broke their hip, and then ended up with an infection and died. It's just the opposite. They don't fall down and break their hip. Their hip cracks. In effect, it begins to disintegrate, come apart. Then they fall down. So for years, they didn't have enough of the proper minerals or were spending too much time without exercising. And that exercise, especially downhill walking, forces minerals into your bones. So that's number one. Number two is we have a lot of women in the United States who suffer from being overweight because they're not exercising and they're eating more calories than what their body require. And thirdly, they also have diabetes. Now, diabetes is a killer disease. In fact, it's one of the top five killer diseases we have in the United States and worldwide. And what happens is you have a fasting blood sugar level. That's when you wake up in the morning. And then you have a after your meal level of blood. And you should take both, and you should take it throughout the day, about three times. And what we have in America is we have medications. Now, the medications are pretty good. They have side effects, yes. But it's saved a lot of lives. Insulin has saved a lot of lives. And because, for different reasons I won't go into now, the body's not able to get the blood sugar stabilized, the insulin into the cells, etc. So they have diabetes. But exercising twice a day, including walking, especially after a meal, within 20 minutes of the meal, get up and take a walk and make part of that walk a brisk walk for about 20 minutes, then doing other exercises, being fully hydrated, and staying away from the refined carbohydrates, the simple sugars, suddenly, the blood sugar comes down. Now, there is something that we all like is called cacao or chocolate. And according to Oxford University, it can help curb fatigue typically associated with multiple sclerosis. So according to a new study, chocolate, and get the non-sugared chocolate, get the one without the dairy in it, just organic raw chocolate, it can help curb the fatigue that is typically associated with multiple sclerosis. This was published in the Journal of Neurology, Neurosurgery, and Psychiatry. And it's just one more thing that can help. One piece of a puzzle. There are many pieces to that, though, but it's something that makes a difference. Also, from University of New South Wales, nature prescriptions can improve physical and mental health. What do I mean? Imagine that your doctor prescribes you a new treatment. It's pleasant and enjoyable, and you can have as much of it as you want. Potential side effects include spontaneous euphoria and being in a good mood. Not to mention, it's free and available all around you. It's not a drug or some other medical procedure that your doctor has recommended. Instead, it's nature prescription. A recommendation to spend more time in nature. All right? And they looked at 28 separate scientific studies, and they found that nature prescriptions work. They really work. And they can help you with all forms of medical conditions. This was published in Lancet Planetary Health. They found that nature prescriptions provided both physical and mental health benefits, reduced patients' blood pressure, as well as lowered depression, lowered anxiety scores, And they had higher daily step counts, and ideally 8,000 to 10,000 steps minimum a day. 15,000 to 20,000, then you're really doing something great for your body and your health and your fitness. But let's start with 8,000 a day. And then as you're doing those 8,000, intermittently within that, do a little faster. By the way, they studied 47,000 adults in New South Wales, and they found that having tree canopies, just trees in general, you could sit under and enjoy, made a huge difference in stress. And by the way, strength training does reduce blood pressure when practiced with moderate to vigorous intensity. So the Sao Paulo State University in Brazil. So include strength training in everything else you're doing. And that is the latest on health and healing. And I'm Gary Nall. And, by the way, we're coming into warmer weather. And a lot of people are going to get out there and get on the grill. And they're going to roast things and fry things and grill things. Not good for your health. They took a look at 32,925 women taking part in the Nurses' Health Study and 53,000 women participating in the Nurses' Health Study, in addition to 17,000 doctors in that study. And what did they find? Well, they found from Harvard School of Public Health that grilling and other high-temperature cooking can raise the risk of high blood pressure. And separately, not in this study, but in other studies, when you're grilling foods at a high temperature, especially animal proteins, the beef, the pork, you're increasing heterocyclic amines, which can cause cancer. Just saying. Now, let's take a break and come back as we have a lot more to share with you. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. And welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I haven't gotten around to a lot of the letters that people write, but I will. We're going to start including more of those on each program. But I do want you to call in today and share your views on the things I'm about to share with you in just a moment. But I thought of another study that just came into my mind, and it could help everyone. It's from Cornell University, the Weill Cornell Women's Brain Initiative. And it talks about brain foods, and they're real, and what to eat to keep your brain healthy and strong. And from a neuroscientist perspective, food is really fundamentally important for brain health because our brains literally run on nutrients. So what they did is they found out which are the most important nutrients for your brain, all right, from childhood on. And scientists found that around 45 nutrients that are key to brain health, including protein, zinc, iron, choline, folate, iodine, vitamin A, D, B6, B12, and the omega-3 fatty acids. And of course, all these are important in a regular way, but we don't have these on a regular basis. So what are some of the foods that if you eat these foods, throw them into a smoothie, you'll get the benefit? And why it matters. Even inexpensive and common berries, blackberries, blueberries, are bursting with vitamin C. Black currants, goji berries, yes. And all good mulberries, terrific for you. Most people, unfortunately, associate the berries with your immune system, and you would be right. But the brain needs these berries also. Vitamin C is an antioxidant, which means it plays a crucial role in neutralizing the naturally occurring free radicals that cause damage to our DNA and cells in the body and brain specifically. So one of the things I have on all my protocols is I have anti-inflammatory nutrients, and that's where your quercetin, vitamin C, D3 come in. And these are also important for the formation of neurotransmitters, the chemicals used for signaling in the nervous system. And so without enough vitamin C, the integrity of our body tissues, including brain, start to weaken. Or remember, raspberries, dark cherries, mulberries, goji berries are also superstars in feeding your brain. Just saying. All right? And those are easy to get and expensive. And if you can't get them organically, well, then do the following. Buy them and clean them up. You know, wash them off, rinse 3 times. That'll help. Also, your green leafy vegetables help the brain as well. And tubers are good for you in addition, and good for the brain. Good in vitamin A, you know, like sweet potatoes and yams. Also, though I'm a vegan, the science shows that fish also is really good for our brains, especially the fat of the brain, and it gives it the right kind of lipids. The DHA is extremely important for building nerve cells, and these cells are responsible for healthy brain growth and development. Just want to share that. Just came to me after we took a break. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to show you some information that I'm not aware that any other regular radio program has shared to date. This is really startling. Do you remember when we had Dr. Martin on and others, and we talked about how is it that Anthony Fauci, the National Institute of Health, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and the University of North Carolina, they were all doing research on gain of function for years before COVID. Was it possible that some of this was used also for weaponizing the gain of function research? We know that the Chinese were doing that because their Defense Department acknowledged it in a study. Brand new information is coming up right now at you. Listen carefully. You can call in and give your response. And I'm pretty sure that the hearings occurring now with Senator Rand Paul will bring all these people in and question them about this. And here's what they're going to say, and you're going to hear for yourself. They're going to say that the United States government, the Department of Defense, before COVID was even known to exist, was offering something like $400,000 for someone to do research in this area. And guess where they were doing the research? In Ukraine. Before the World Health Organization, before it was named, before we even knew it existed, before the first cases occurred. How is it you're getting someone to do research on something that's never existed? Boy, that's an important link. Does that open up our mind to, gee whiz, then were they actually doing this secretly for a long period of time? You decide. Now to the clip.
Well, here's a question for you. Why did the United States Department of Defense post a job posting trying to hire someone for, quote, COVID-19 research 3 months before anyone in the world ever heard of COVID? Well, that's a damn good question, Clayton. Thank you for asking. The news outlet, though, The Exposé out of the UK, has the story. They're asking the question. They have the bombshell story. Here it is, quote, and I'll just read right from expose.uk. The world first started to hear about a novel coronavirus in early January 2020, with reports of an alleged new pneumonia-like illness spreading across Wuhan, China. However, the world did not actually know of COVID-19 until February 2020, because it was not until the 11th of that month that the World Health Organization officially named the novel coronavirus disease as COVID-19. So, they say, with this being the official truth, why does the United States government data show that the U.S. Department of Defense awarded a contract on the 12th of November 2019 to Labyrinth Gold Health Incorporated for COVID-19 research, at least 1 month before the alleged emergence of the novel coronavirus, and 3 months before it was officially dubbed COVID-19? It's a good question. Thank you for asking it. Let's dig a little deeper. So here is that job post. Take a look at the job post here, and you can see the needs are from Labyrinth Global Health on the 12th of November 2019 for almost $400,000 is the job. SME manuscript documentation and COVID-19 research, the job posting says. Then here is a closer look at it, just so you can see. Here it is, the COVID-19 research. That's what your job will be in November of 2019. And here's just a, so you know where, that's the date as well, the 19th, excuse me, November 12th of 2019. Very curious indeed. But it gets worse. The contract was for research to be conducted in, can you guess the country? Can any of you guess the country?
I can, but I probably am out.
Why?
Because I can see it here, and I read the story earlier.
You read some of my notes.
Yeah.
Can anyone else guess the country where this job posting would be? Anyone in the chat have any idea where this job posting would be? Like, we need COVID-19 research, and the country where you'll be based? See if anyone can name that in the chat. Let's see if anyone can name it. Yes, you got it. The answer is Ukraine. So your job will be in Ukraine. No, not the United States, but Ukraine. So as the expose reports, the contract awarded in November 2019 for COVID-19 research was not only instructed to take place in Ukraine, it was in fact part of a much larger contract for a biological threat reduction program in Ukraine. And you won't believe who was involved in this shady group. Labyrinth Global Health, which has the contract posted by the Pentagon, has been collaborating with Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance and the company Metabiota. Remember Metabiota? Since it was founded in 2017. Does Metabiota ring a bell to any of you watching our show? If you've been watching our show for any length of time, then you know why this should ring a bell. As we recently reported on Redacted, back in 2014, a firm called Metabiota, which specializes in detecting, tracking, and analyzing potential disease outbreaks, signed an $18 million federal contract as a subcontractor for Black and Viatch, which is in Georgia and Ukraine. Metabiota was started with the help from President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, and his investment firm, Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners, which, of course, he founded alongside John Kerry's stepson in 2009. Then, surprisingly, the top Ukrainian prosecutor started looking into this shady connection between Hunter Biden and these bio labs and Metabiota. And then when Vice President Biden caught wind of this, he asked to have that prosecutor in Ukraine fired. Otherwise, we'd pull your funding. We know this because he bragged about it right on camera, as we reported. Watch.
I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. We're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. Got fired.
Oh, well, it's amazing how that works, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then in February of last year, documents show that Zelensky ordered the destruction of all documents related to the Hunter Biden connection and the destruction of the Metabiota documents that then were burned in big dumps in the back, which we showed you the video of that. So the expose wraps this up with two very important questions. Why did the Department of Defense pay a company that is...
Please give us a call at 888-874-4888. I'm hopeful that most of you are not just listening to this program today, but actually watching. And you can watch in real time me and the video clips. The video clips are what are important by going to PRN.live, scrolling down to where it shows and archives, and then the Gary and All archives, and that is where you watch this. You really got to watch this next clip because it tells you who controls the food supply, at least 85% of all the food in America. Everything you eat, these people control. Do you know about them? Do you know how they became the most powerful force of food? You will now. Here's an interesting clip on that subject.
There's blood on the hands of the Packers and leaders in Washington, and no one seems to care. I know we live in a country where capitalism reigns supreme, and it's every man for himself, but Packers take capitalism to a whole new level.
They've been called the worst company in the world. They once had an intelligence operation bigger than the CIA, and they have near complete control over how and what you eat. Cargill Incorporated is the biggest privately owned company in America by a huge margin. They bring in more money than the third, fourth, and fifth largest companies combined. Pretty much any food you buy, they make a little bit of money off of. This is a result of over a century of consolidation, absorbing, buying up, and merging with other companies to try to control a chunk of every aspect of the food economy.
Cargill's Allburger brand salts.
Plant proteins.
Asphalt rejuvenator.
Super chicken, I do up yung jinmo so khat hang.
Partially hydrogenated product.
A very, very special treat.
Their power and breadth have kept wages down, squashed worker power, and pushed family farms to the brink of non-existence, while manipulating prices for the consumer. That's you. And that ubiquity is about to get even worse. Cargill has plans to absorb a chicken empire. It's all made one family very, very rich. The Cargill McMillans own 88% of the company. 14 of them are billionaires. The family is worth a total of $40 billion. How does so much wealth get concentrated into so few hands? To answer that, we have to go back 127 years to the beginnings of Cargill's history. This is The Classroom by More Perfect Union, and today we're going to look at how the Cargills got rich. Cargill began in 1865, right as the Civil War ended, with the purchase of a single grain storage warehouse. As the then new railroad expanded along the American West, Cargill facilities followed. At the time, the Cargills didn't really own farms or actually produce anything. They just weaseled themselves into grain profits by controlling infrastructure and storage. Then, as one of the first clues the family treats real life like Game of Thrones,
one flesh, one heart, one soul, now and forever,
W.W. Cargill married off his daughter Edna to John H. McMillan, whose family owned even more grain warehouses. The companies merged. They became the Cargill McMillans, the family we know today. By the early 1900s, Cargill controlled so much different industry that if a grain farmer in the Midwest didn't do business with Cargill, they couldn't do business at all. World War I breaks out, and Cargill makes a profit. They started expanding out of the Midwest, building out what they internally called the Endless Belt. Picture a giant, nation-spanning conveyor belt hauling wheat from a farm in western Iowa. It stops at a mill facility in Chicago to become flour. The flour goes to a bakery in Pittsburgh where it's turned into a Kaiser roll, and then it lands at a New York City deli to become a delicious Reuben. Cargill's plan was to make money at each step of the way, selling seed and supplies to the farmer, storing the grain, selling tools to the mill, sourcing sesame seeds for the bakery, and selling curing salt to the deli. Oh, and they own the transportation systems too. The further it goes, the more they make. In 1924, they acquired the Taylor and Bornique Company, a competitor, who had a unique technology, a private wire system. Back then, this was the equivalent of having your own internet.
Now that I've gotten on the internet, I'd rather be on my computer than doing just about anything.
The tech was so good, it remained in operation till 1996, well into the internet age. Getting good information quickly was important, because Cargill was beginning to work in commodities futures trading. That's gambling on the future prices of necessities like wheat, corn, and meat. A lot of this business is done at the Chicago Board of Trade, which was basically a real version of how you pictured the stock market as a kid. A bunch of guys yelling in a room about the price of a bushel of wheat. Novelist Frank Norris wrote in his The Epic of the Wheat, "Think of it, the food of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people just at the mercy of a few men down there at the Board of Trade. They make the price. They say just how much the peasant shall pay for his loaf of bread. If he can't pay the price, he simply starves." Cargill established information superiority. If they got information about something that could affect wheat prices at one location, they could instantly blast that information to other locations and change how they invest. This is one of the ways consolidation helps. Because Cargill had so many business arms, they got all the best information all of the time. Sounds a lot like insider trading, right? In commodities trading, that's basically legal. In contrast to stocks, commodities trading is the only major US market where companies are allowed to act on inside information to manage risks others might not know about. In fact, that is how futures markets were designed. This is how Cargill managed to profit off the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl of the 1930s. The Dust Bowl was caused in large part by the too quick expansion of agriculture into the American prairie by companies like Cargill. Farmers changed the landscape of the area too quickly, and the ecosystem couldn't handle it. The Great Depression was caused in large part by speculation, again, a Cargill practice. Cargill, of course, had a different idea of whose fault the Depression was. CEO John McMillan Sr. blamed the labor movement. They got entirely out of hand and demanded to reduce the number of hours worked to 40 hours a week. It is making the cost of everything so great that neither the farmer nor anyone else can live. The Depression sent grain prices down, and the Dust Bowl sent them up. Cargill profited both times. Their intelligence network had predicted the corn shortage and stockpiled it. And people noticed. For the first time, there were attempts to regulate the Cargill model of business. The Chicago Board of Trade banned Cargill. New Deal programs attempted to slow consolidation and regulate speculation, but Cargill executives argued against those programs to the public and FDR administration officials, saying the government should be cutting costs on labor instead. Their lobbying worked, and the Department of Agriculture agreed to a plan that gave the grain trading industry almost complete control over regulating themselves. In the following decades, they bought more and more companies, from other agriculture businesses to seemingly random endeavors like Las Vegas casinos and Tokyo Love hotels. Significantly, they've also taken over much of the meat industry. There are four big meat companies: Tyson, JBS, National Beef, and Cargill, which collectively control 85% of the world's meat. They decide the prices, they decide the supply, they decide what we eat and how much we pay for it. And despite these companies using the illusion of inflation to raise prices, they think they're helping.
You can't have a bunch of small players delivering such an important food source to the nation's consumers. You have to have larger companies that can do it cheaply and can keep costs down.
All of that consolidation has made a massive corporation that's still privately owned, 88% by the Cargill McMillan family, and doesn't have to report anything to the public. These days, the family isn't as involved in the direct management of the company as they used to be. They still dominate the board, but the executives are outsiders. But they still make an income off the company. Dividends are payments corporations mete out to shareholders periodically. The Cargills got paid $1.13 billion in dividends in 2020. That's 44,000 times what the average American family farm made the same year. Cargill Inc. and the Cargill McMillan family aren't one and the same, but the fiduciary responsibility of the company is to make money for the family. And they're only getting more powerful. The family and the company are major beneficiaries of a pro-corporate government. When Cargill was accused of having child slaves in the Ivory Coast, the Supreme Court dropped the case because the statute that allowed foreigners to sue in American court couldn't be used to sue corporations. The Commodity Futures Modernization Act of 2000 took away what limited regulations over speculative commodities we had, which led to Cargill opening up hedge funds that invested in commodity futures. They were selling people investments in a market they controlled. And they want to get even bigger. Cargill recently completed a merger with Sanderson Chicken, the third largest chicken producer in America.
Our customers and also consumers, they want to eat more chicken.
A coalition of senators had implored the Department of Justice to investigate and stop it. This mega merger, in a sector already plagued with consolidation and illegal behaviors that harm farmers and consumers alike, represents a new threat to building a competitive agricultural industry. But the DOJ allowed the deal to go through with one caveat. The combined companies would stop using the tournament system, where top-performing workers got bonuses taken from the paychecks of lower performers, a practice enabled by consolidation.
Just 2 days after this announcement, I was handed a pay cut. In this take-it-or-leave-it relationship with Sanderson, they told me that they were going to reduce my income by one-third. And whether or not I signed this pay contract, that all Sanderson growers, only within the state of Mississippi, would receive this pay cut.
It's easier to treat your employees poorly when the guy across town does too. The companies also had to pay a fine, $85 million total. That's almost nothing to the vast wealth of the Cargills. That wealth was hoarded at the expense of small farmers, working people, people who eat food, and people who simply live on Earth. Cargill is one of the worst polluters in the world. At least a portion of the Cargill's $40 billion was taken from you. The rise of the Cargill Corporation and the wealth hoarding of the few dozen family members benefiting from it shows that aggressive consolidation in any industry is bad for working people and needs to be regulated.
Okay, I'm going to sign off as far as video streaming because I can't video stream and take your calls. So we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, if there are calls there at 888-874-4888, we're going to take them. And here's a larger question. It is my belief that we have crossed the Rubicon and we're not coming back. Are you aware of that? Are you aware of how much power we have ceded to individuals and groups, organizations, government agencies over every aspect of our life? They want to have total control over everything we do, how we think, and they have artificial intelligence to be able to control that. Yet the artificial intelligence is not perfect. There's a lot of problems. One of the artificial intelligence robotics that looks like a human being, you couldn't tell it wasn't, when asked what it thought of these humans, it wanted to kill everyone. Well, okay. What happens when you've programmed artificial intelligence to the degree it can program itself? Do you really think that it's going to want to be told what to do? That's a serious issue. Even Elon Musk and others who are in the field who are trying to profit from this are asking for 6 months moratorium. There'll be no moratorium because people are rushing to get artificial intelligence out there. Why? Because the public demands it. You know, people don't want to have to write anymore. It'll write everything for you. It can write a book. It can write an article. You don't have to do art anymore. Art directors will be completely gone because it can do any kind of art better than any art director. It can figure problems. It can do diagnostics better than any MRI, CAT scan, or physician. It's going to wipe out upwards of 60 to 80% of the entire American workforce. And have you thought about the role of artificial intelligence in our future? It's not good. And yet many people say, hey, you mean I can get an artificial person that looks like a real human being to come in my house and do all my work and do anything I want and never argue and always satisfy my needs? Yeah, yeah. Costs a lot of money, but yes. Well, I want that. I don't like being lonely anymore. Whoa. And what about all the people? I'm a publisher. I don't want to pay writers to write. Ah, artificial intelligence, I can tell them what I want and they'll write it exactly the length and the way I want, better than anyone could. Oh, and diagnosing that disease. Oh, yeah. Why should we trust a human who can make an error and does in their diagnostic when artificial intelligence will do it without making an error? Right now, a very large percentage of all the people going to college will not have a job when they get out. Artificial intelligence, automation will take its place. So you've got the debt of college. The college and university have got the profit and huge endowments. They're happy. You won't be. And why aren't we asking these questions of the universities? Why don't you eliminate all classes and all courses that are going to be redundant because artificial intelligence? Why aren't we promoting trade schools? Why aren't we encouraging people not to go to college and find other ways of getting work and being educated? But we're not. Your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. We're going to take a break and come right back. Okay, let's see if we have any calls up. None yet. We have Dylan. Dylan's on the board. He is one of our team at the Progressive Radio Network that keeps it all running. And he'll let me know when we have something. By the way, the film you just saw, a clip of it, was called More Perfect Union. And it's from a new nonprofit media group organization with a mission to empower working people. Good for you. We give you our support. Now, I have another clip that I'm going to play. It's a short clip, but boy, is this devastating. You haven't seen this. You haven't heard this. Yesterday, Richard Gale and I discussed what is the actual death injury, severe injury rate of COVID. Just in the United States, 7 million injured, 1,360,000 seriously injured, and 300,000 dead. But that's changed. We're going to play you a clip now. The person from this clip is one of Canada's most respected pathologists. He was one of the first to come forward and suggest other treatments early on. His name is Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, for coming forward and suggesting monoclonal antibodies and azithromycin and hydroxychloroquine, all of that, and ivermectin, vitamin C, zinc, proving beneficial and saving lives, All of the doctors initially who suggested that have all been reprimanded, their licenses challenged, and their reputations, which were impeccable. They're all pro-vaccine, all pro-Orthodox doctors. They were trashed. Here he is making some comments from a credible source. Listen carefully what he has to say.
But one of the big pieces of news over the last couple of days has been a Substack by a gentleman called Peter Halligan has been looking. He's a most experienced analyst, financial industry, extremely used to looking at statistics and translating them into a summary statement. And this is the summary statement. And I hope your leaders are sitting down, holding themselves,
Gary, just
because
so you know,
what I'm going to tell you intuitively sounds
Phil
ridiculous.
From California.
That's why it's so incredibly important that I say
Phil
this.
Phil from California.
These numbers are best estimates at this point in time using government data for the global consequences of the clot shot in terms of death and morbidity, otherwise known as serious adverse events such as heart attack, strokes, pulmonary emboli, etc. We've been focusing for good reason on North American statistics during the last 2.5 years, but this man has extrapolated that into the total effect, negative effect, of the clot shot. And these are the numbers. Deaths, global deaths, directly attributable to the vaccine, 20 million, 20 million deaths due to the clot shot. And 2 billion, big B, 2 billion serious adverse reactions of the type I described. Now, these numbers are beyond staggering.
Keep in mind, these are not just brought out of thin air. There's a lot of statistical analysis that all governments have been hiding. The Israeli government, the United States government, United Kingdom government. Everyone's afraid to tell you the truth for fear that this will lead to a lot of litigation, which it's going to no matter what. Every single study that's coming out now is showing everything they said was a lie. Now, in fact, the very first thing that would have stopped all this is to have had an honest replication of the PCR test. Remember, you all got the PCR test, got the swabs? Okay. The man who invented that and won the Nobel Prize, I happen to have known. Interviewed him a lot. I did the longest interview he said he'd ever had. It was 1 hour and 54 minutes at his house. I flew out. And you see us walking on the beach and talking. And then the rest of the interview was in this tiny little kitchen right up against a window that didn't have window blinds. So cars coming through, you'd see the lights. That was Professor Kerry Mullis. But he said that he wanted to debate Anthony Fauci. He didn't like Fauci, thought he was a nut and completely unqualified. And he said he got permission of the president of the University of South Carolina to arrange a debate at the university between Anthony Fauci and him. And Fauci declined. But here's what he said. He said anything above 13 amplifications is going to be junk. Fauci said anything above mid-20s is junk. It's junk. What did you have your amplification at? Did any of you know? Did you even know the term amplification? It means you keep blowing it up and then blowing it up again, blowing it up again. You could have a trillion blowups. It was at 41 to 44. 41 to 44 when junk was in the mid-20s, or half that amount. So therefore, the entire world was subjected to a fraudulent PSA test and got all these false positives, which the New York Times immediately made into cases. Now, a case means you manifest some symptoms. Most of these were asymptomatic, no cases. That just shows you how you've been played. So here is what he's saying. He's saying worldwide, 20 million people have died because of the vaccine, far more than COVID. And right now, 80 to 90% of the people getting sick, going to the hospital, and dying are those fully vaccinated. This morning, I spoke with a longtime friend, and he was asking me a question dealing with death. And I had a conversation with him about that, and I'm sending him off some protocols today. And I said, why did you get the vaccine? You're 81 years old. Why? Well, you know, teaching, you got to do it. You got to get them all. At 80, you're old enough. You have enough resources and savings. You don't have to put your life in the balance. How much more could you teach that you haven't already taught? How much more could you share than you already haven't shared in a wonderful life? And you could do a lot more. And people have this idea that their job is more important than their life, as if there's no other option. There's always another option. Let's say hello to Phil from California. Hi, Phil, you're on.
Hi, Gary.
Hi. What would you like to share with us, Phil?
I want to express my appreciation for you airing these video clips. I think one was a redacted video and the More Perfect Union video. I think you are onto something which I and others have also been concerned with. This is the fundamental conflict in society, which it seems to be at the heart of most, if not all, of these issues that we're all concerned about. From the COVID-19 issue, big pharma profiteering, and the biosecurity state, as Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been warning us, the biosecurity state being used to impose totalitarian controls, to the banking crisis, to the consolidation of the food system, as the video showed, Cargill, the audio clip. So this fundamental issue that I think you're on to is this fundamental conflict between capital and labor. That clip you aired showed us how the capital consolidating power and the industry of the food industry was turned around and blamed on labor. Similarly, when the banking crisis happened, this is also being blamed on labor as well. The Federal Reserve argues the NIRU concept, which is the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment. And these Federal Reserve economists argue that we need more unemployment, that they need to raise the interest rates in order to increase unemployment, to drive wages down, to reduce the inflation. So everywhere we turn, we see this conflict between capital and labor. And so I'm glad that you're highlighting this. You're kind of shining the light on this thing here. And a lot of us, no matter what we do to get involved, I think unless we understand this fundamental conflict between capital and labor, we're going to kind of set ourselves up for things to happen over and over again.
Well said, Phil. Phil, you sound like our Jeremiah, our Harlem Oracle. You sound like an oracle from California. Thank you for those comments. First and foremost, I would say it's not capital and labor. I would change that and say it's debt to labor, because all of the monopolization, taking 1,300 media companies and bring them all into about 5 to 7, to have 5 companies such as BlackRock and Vanguard, State Street, Berkshire Hathaway, and Fidelity, that have the largest single repository of assets that they own. Now, it's not theirs. They get a commission for doing this, and a very big one, but they own all these companies. All these companies then have debt. But nobody cares about debt when the interest to borrow money through the Federal Reserve's window is functionally a little under 1%. Now, for the consumer, it's higher. But let's just say that you pay on your credit card and you buy something because you don't have disposable income. How in the world do they get the idea that credit card purchases represent a gross domestic product only for those people who control the debt, not to the person buying it? To the person who bought something, they owe that plus interest of 18%. And if you miss a payment or don't pay it a full amount, they can double that or increase it substantially. So we are a nation in debt $221 trillion, not including derivatives, and every one of the major banks has anywhere between $100 to $110 trillion in derivatives. So if one bank fails, the entire banking system collapses in hours because there's not enough money in the world, and certainly not in the United States, to backstop that. Smaller banks, yes, they'll backstop. Billion here, 20 billion there. They can do that. Not when it comes to the big banks, and yet everyone's getting out of the small banks, credit unions, putting the money in the big banks. But here's what's happening. Here is the billion-pound gorilla in the room that's going to crush the dollar, I believe, within the next 24 months or earlier. The BRICS nations, because now Saudi Arabia and Iran are trading in their currencies, not the dollar. The euro dollar is dead. It's done. Now you have 22 countries, major countries, wanting to, including the whole nation of Malaysia, wanting to join BRICS. I believe that the BRICS membership will be accelerated, so within 2 years you could have 60 to 70 countries as members of BRICS, which means they'll have the world's largest economy, largest production, the lowest debt, and the highest quality of life. The dollar will sink overnight the moment you read that the dollar is no longer the commanding the world currency, because what's attached to the dollar? All of our liquid assets. All of those stocks in those companies, that's the dollar. If you have gold and silver, you're smart. I'm not even going to hear out suggest treasuries, which historically I would, because I see debt default, and then the Fed will just print money that it's been doing without anything to back it up. And so then these other countries are going to say, why should I have the Canadian dollar, the Swiss franc, Japan, which is part of our mixed currency, is now going to be going towards Russia. They're making deals. So that's what the American public doesn't understand. And so watch where you put your money, get out of debt, and don't have mortgages. Thank you. Well, I want to introduce a couple things to you right now. First and foremost, at this moment, our anti-aging clinical study for the 2 weeks in May, the 14th to 27th, is full. And this is from people, we've allowed for control group people 40 up. And then we're going to measure 40, 50, and 60 against 70, 80, and 90. And we're going to see, is there, it's a hypothesis, is there a different level of motivation and determination to complete something between two different groups of people? And there are no diseases allowed in these groups. So if someone drops out, or if we find out from the people that they have medical conditions they're hiding from us, and we just found out one yesterday, that they can't walk. Well, how in the world are you going to do all of our exercise if you can't walk? Well, I thought, you know, maybe you could help me get to walk. No, that's a separate issue. I'm happy to help anyone with any condition, but not in this study. This is anti-aging. This is really serious. And I'll be making a presentation, I believe, at the world's largest congress on scientists coming up in a couple of weeks. I'll be explaining what we're doing. So at this moment, unless I give you the word, the anti-aging is full and it's historic. Our goal is to try to increase people's lifespans by 5 years in 2 weeks, plus the rest of the other 10 weeks they do at home. In any case, but still open is the ability to come to the health and nutrition retreat, which is going to be at the same time, but different workshops completely. So if you want to come and enjoy yourself and detoxify and have a great time and learn a lot and de-stress and rejuvenate and cleanse, that's still open, three places only. That's 2 weeks, same time. You'll call Luann at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Now, something else is important is that I was looking around. I was in a couple health food stores in the last few days, and I wanted specifically to see all their fruit and vegetable powders. And by the way, most of them are based upon my original green stuff and red stuff. They don't know my formula, but they're kind of throwing some fruits and vegetables together. But all of them, not one of them, gives you a single serving of fruits or vegetables that I could find. In fact, I'm not aware anywhere in America that a serving of the fruit and vegetable powders gives you a single serving. Well, what's the purpose of eating fruits and vegetables? It is to give you the full spectrum of antioxidants, nutrients, and phytonutrients, etc., to help feed your cells. Why do you think the USDA says you have to have a minimum of 3.5 to a maximum 5.5 servings a day? So I just started trying something on myself because of my new product, and it called Fruit and Veggie Stuff. And I wanted to see what I could do. And so I started by taking two servings, one in the morning and one in the evening, of Fruit and Vegetable Stuff. Now, this is not the same thing as this in Green Stuff, Red Stuff, Power Berry Bliss. Those are specific phytonutrients that I will not make claims for. If I told you what actually happens in your body when you have Green Stuff or Red Stuff or Power Berry Blast or Cruciferous Stuff, but to do that, I would have to make claims. And I've never made claims. I'll just simply say, if you've been taking Green Stuff and Red Stuff and Power Berry Blast and the other stuff, you're smart. And your cells are going to love you because I put certain selections of superfoods together. Just because what the superfood does, and you can look at any of the ingredients, go to PubMed for yourself and you'll see. But Fruit and Vegetable Stuff is different. This is to cover our full spectrum of the fruits and vegetables we need in a day in case we're not eating our ideally 9 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. The average American probably is lucky to get 1 or 2, children even less. So I'm now taking 2, one in the morning, one in the evening. So I'm getting 6 servings. And as of a week ago, I had a third serving. I have 1 in the morning and 1 in the early afternoon and 1 in the evening. I've never felt in years this, what I feel now. This is really terrific. In fact, I'm having my blood taken to see what difference it's making. But I can tell you this, watch my documentaries, or watch my classroom on the air, and watch this. I do my first part of my noon show, I video stream. And see the difference in how I look, my hair, its thickness, shininess, its length. Just take a look for yourself. I won't say anything more than that. So here's the deal. If you want to make sure every day that you're really doing the right thing as far as your total fruit and vegetable servings, I know of no other product that gives you 3 servings in a single scoop. I know of no other, and it took me 3 years to develop this science, so I'm sure as hell not going to tell anyone else. But now, and you're getting the best of the best. You're getting mangoes and black currants and cantaloupe and watermelon and papaya and plums and green peas and zucchini and tomatoes and watercress and squash and pea fiber and blackberries, etc. Plus 430 milligrams of potassium in each serving. Each serving. All right? So, and you're getting 8 grams of fiber in a single serving. Right now, I'm getting 24 grams of fiber a day just from this. So this is a superstar way of doing it. So I'm just suggesting those of you who are trying one scoop, excuse me, try scoop 2. All right. Yeah, you're going to go through the jar a little quicker. So what? Look at what you're getting. 3 servings of fruits and vegetables per serving. So right now, if you did 2, you're getting more fruits and serving vegetables in your body each day than what the USDA's official guidelines recommends. If you're doing what I'm doing 3, then you're way up at the 1% of the 1% getting what you need. The other ones are powerful, but for separate reasons that one doesn't take place the other. So what do we do? All right, well, you make a call. Here's what you do. You can go online, order for yourself, and you're getting a discount on it. And by the way, if I charged you my pass-alongs, you'd be paying a huge amount for the vitamin C's. 300% increase was the amount that my manufacturer said he was charging and passing it to me. I never passed any of that to you. Have you noticed your prices haven't changed in years? Mine have. I didn't pass it forward because I know many of you are in limited budgets, and so it's just a way of sharing. So you can order it yourself. You can call Neil in our vitamin closet, or you can go ahead and visit him. People do at 35th and 5th Avenue, and Monday to Saturday, noon to 8, or call him on the phone, 646-926-5430, 646-926-5430, or call Sandy and Diane at 877-627 877-627-5065. Let me repeat, 877-627-5065. And this has been such a hit that we're running low. So I've ordered a lot of new. And right now, as of, I believe today, we just got one of the products we've been out of for a year. I mean, there's all kinds of problems out there trying to get product. The ingredients, farmers have gone broke, and transportation, but we're getting ahead of the curve. I'm stocking up for at least a three-year supply of everything because I believe we're going to go through a nightmare of food distribution in the next year or two. So that's it. Fruit and veggie stuff, unlike any product in the world that I've seen, no one has figured it out. I did. It's what I do. I find solutions. So now, if you're not sitting down and having at least six servings of fruits and vegetables a day, eating them, this is your next best way of getting them. Even when I'm doing, I'm taking three servings. Yeah, you got to order a little extra. I'm going to come up with some kind of plan for those who want to do that so you can save some money on it. I'll help you. But for today, make a call and get your fruit and veggie stuff. We're out of time, everyone. Stay tuned right now for Utrice Lead. Oh, by the way, ask Utrice, what was her blood sugar this morning? What was her blood pressure this morning? Is it true that she's lost 67 pounds? Not bad. Now, Utrice.